Kate Schatz is a writer, editor, and educator. Her first book of fiction, Rid of Me, A Story, was published in 2006 on Continuum Press as part of the acclaimed 33 and a Third series. She is the chair of the School of Literary Arts at Oakland School for the Arts, where she teaches fiction, poetry, and journalism to 9th through 12th graders. Her book, Rad, American Women A to Z, it is her second book out with City Lights, and we're delighted to have her on our show today. Kate Schatz, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations on your wonderful book, Rad American Women A to Z. I just like to say that. I love saying the title, Rad American Women A to Z, which was written by you and has wonderful illustrations by an artist, Miriam Kleinstahl, also. So congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
For our listeners out there, the book has a range of, it's really a range of icons and maybe sheroes, and you know, begins with folks like Angela Davis, and it even includes more obscure names like Jovita Idar, who is a teacher from Laredo, Texas, and it concludes with Zora Neale Hurston. Tell us about the book. Tell the listeners out there about your book.
Sure. So Rad American Women A to Z is, and it's an alphabet book, really,
right.
But, you know, I like to say that it's a children's book for everyone. So it's
definitely
structured like a children's book. It goes A to Z, and for each letter of the alphabet, you get an inspiring, radical woman from American history.
Yes.
And so, as you said, A is for Angela Davis, Z is for Zora Neale Hurston, and then we go cover the alphabet in between. So for each woman, there's a one-page short biography,
right,
and then a beautiful illustration by the artist. And we wanted to focus on women who aren't normally in the history books. You know, we kind of avoided, like, maybe the top five that everybody's heard of.
Right.
Not because they're not amazing, but because we want to expand the list of who people know about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. That was one of the first things that attracted me to the book was, you know, here is a book that has heroes in here, you know, that have changed some of the face of America in some way in their own respective fields. And yet we've never heard their names, at least for the most part.
Right.
Like Wilma Mankiller is one of them who is, you know, I've known of her, but it was just great to see her in a book profiled like this. Tell us how the book, the idea for the book started.
So I got the idea several years ago when my daughter was actually about 2 years old. I am a longtime writer and feminist, mm-hmm, and activist and all of those things. And after I had my daughter, I felt like, I was going to take a different approach to all of those things. Being a mom really changed my perspective on feminism and activism and writing. And I was reading her all these children's books, and we had all these A to Z books, and they were all about animals and fruit and food. And, you know, one day it just kind of popped into my head, what if I did an A to Z of cool women from history? I was a women's history major or women's studies major in college.
Right.
So this
makes
has
sense.
Always been a passion of mine.
Yes.
So I Googled it, figuring that there must be a bunch of things like that, and there really weren't. So I decided I would do it. I would make it happen.
I love that, you know, when we as writers sort of say, you know, I'm going to make the book that I want to see out in the world.
You know, exactly. And I think so often writers end up trying to mimic what's already out there, because if you're looking to get success,
right,
and get published, you think, oh, what's already successful? I'm going to do that. And
right.
I wanted to do something different and create what I wasn't seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of writing out of the margins, you know, writing out, mm-hmm, of the sort of obscure places. And that's exactly what the book does. And it's because you could have done this, you know, as a somebody who has a background in history and creative writing, you could have done this for adults or for any kind of range of audiences, but you chose to do it as a children's book.
And I did that. I've always loved children's literature. I'm a teacher as well. I teach high school.
Oh, right.
But I've taught all ages, but I really think that the impact that books have on young people, it's something that sticks with people for their whole lives. You know, when you ask,
sure,
most adults, what are the books you've loved most in your life? Most people will name at least one book they read as a child.
Absolutely.
You know, whether it was like something like To Kill a Mockingbird or,
yeah,
you know, like a Frog and Toad or Friends, you know, like, or, you know, Shel Silverstein, people remember those books they encounter as children. And so I wanted to start there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was actually just thinking about this myself earlier, is that this book, what you're talking about here is totally accurate, because, you know, not only do I remember as a child my, you know, one or two books that really, that I still kind of hang on to in the back of my mind, you know, and still play some kind of influential role in my life as a writer and as a human being, but also I remember, you know, the teacher who introduced me to that book, or the kind of the schoolroom space of that time. Mm-hmm. Like all of that comes back to me when I think of the book or the story that you know, I remember that stuck with me. And no doubt teachers probably find this a great resource, right? I mean, have you been working, have you heard from teachers on this?
Yeah.
Other than yourself, really, because you are a teacher.
it's been right. Incredible. You know, and Miriam, the illustrator, she's also a teacher. She founded the arts program at Berkeley High School in Berkeley, California. And, you know, so she and I, we both came at this from teachers, and we weren't consciously thinking, you know, how are we going to create a book for teachers? But I know that was in our minds as we were creating the book. And yeah, teachers have been absolutely loving this. It's been really exciting to see what teachers are doing. They're creating incredible lesson plans. And we actually have those resources on our website. We have some ideas for lesson plans and how it can be used in the classroom. But we've seen teachers from as young as first grade teachers using it in the classroom. We've got college professors who are teaching it in a range of classes. It's really being used across the board and by teachers.
Right, right. And then, you know, not only as a kind of as a great resource in that way, but also, you know, I mean, I myself as a parent, I mean, it's also a great resource for parents, you know, as a parent of two younger children anyways. I also have a 22-year-old, but as a parent of a 7-year-old boy and an 11-year-old girl, you know, I always kind of test out these kinds of books on my kids at home, on my children, you know. And and this book, not only does it have a very great diverse selection of subjects, but it's also, you know, the illustrations made it fun and engaging for my 7-year-old, and the stories themselves were compelling. And also at the same time, intellectual enough, I think, for my 11-year-old, you know. So this whole push towards sort of diversifying our books and the books that teachers find on the shelves, I know that there's a kind of a campaign out there that you've been involved with as well. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. You know, and I always want to be clear when I'm talking about the We Need Diverse Books campaign. You know, it's something that I have been a supporter of, and I'm as a white ally, I'm so supportive of it, but I'm by no means central to it. It's run by an incredible group of writers of color who saw a need in the publishing industry, in the writing world, to just really push the conversation about the need for not just diverse characters in books, but supporting writers of color, and also getting people of color into the publishing world, right? Because you can have people writing these stories, but if everyone at the top who's making the choices is not supportive of this mission, it's not going to work. But
Absolutely.
we really consciously wanted to focus on women of color in this book. You know, again, when you go back to the experiences that young people have with the books they encounter, you know, if they're not seeing people like themselves, people with the same skin or hair or family structures or bodies and abilities, if they're not seeing that, you know, they're still going to connect with books, but it makes such a difference when they see people like themselves reflected.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I've had wonderful experiences reading to young people, and I was at a fifth grade classroom, and I turned the page to Wilma Mankiller, and this young girl who'd been not really paying much attention, you know, suddenly she shot up and she raises her hand. She goes, "Is she Native American? I'm Native American too." And it was like this huge moment for her to see, you know, someone like her in a book. So that was a real conscious decision for us. But the We Need Diverse Books campaign, you know, like so many things, like Black Lives Matter and Oscar's So White, it started as a hashtag.
Right.
And it's become a full-on nonprofit, and they've really changed the conversation in publishing.
Wow.
And you see that reflected in the people who were nominated for big awards this year. Like, it's really, really shifting the conversation in an exciting way.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously this book is a great contribution to that. You know, I kept thinking about, you know, something that I just, in terms of the editing process for the book, or at least the selection process, right? I bet you that must have been quite a feat. Like, tell us about that. I mean, was there a committee? Was it just you? How'd that work?
committee of one. No, committee of two. That took the longest. I began by making a list of, you know, who are my own people that I'm inspired by and my heroes, but I wanted to go beyond that. So I kind of crowdsourced it by asking a ton of people that I knew, who would you want to see? And then from there, I did a lot of research, and Miriam and I collaborated to figure out who we'd put in it. Now, we wanted to have a balance of people from different genres. So, you know, we have scientists, we have rock stars, we have poets and activists.
Right.
We also wanted to show a range of time periods.
We
wanted to balance women who are living with women who are long gone. And again, we wanted to focus on women of color. So with all that criteria, plus we had to then find one person for each letter of the alphabet.
That's right.
It was like a giant fun puzzle, and we eventually were able to narrow it down. There were some that I knew right away, like I knew Z would be Zora Neale Hurston. That was like a done deal.
Yeah, right. But, slam dunk. Yeah.
You know, but then some letters like A, it's like, how do you choose between Angela Davis and Audre Lorde and Adrienne Rich and Asada Shakur?
Yeah, a lot of A's in there.
You know. Yeah, and so that was quite challenging.
So even with
but
something
we did it.
Right, and you did a great job of it. And so even with the choice like that, for example, if you don't mind me kind of pinning down here a little bit, which is, you know, all like the A's, okay? So each of those, Audre Lorde and Adrienne Rich and Angela Davis and Asada, all of them, like, you know, it's each of them have a very, what's the criteria? Like, how do you end up choosing Angela Davis, for example, you know, because each of them have just a fantastic legacy, you know, and
Oh, they were all, let's see. Well, I did have my initial list of women was very heavy on writers, right, as a writer. And so someone like Audre Lorde and Adrienne Rich, it was kind of like, well, we have a few other writers, so we, you know, maybe we won't use them. But for us, having Angela Davis first, you know, she's from the Bay Area. That's where we live.
Right, yeah.
Her legacy at, I went to UC Santa Cruz where she taught, you know, we both grew up seeing the influence of the Black Panthers and the work that she's such an icon, especially in our area. So that felt kind of close to our heart, wanting to honor her. And you know, it is also very intentional putting her first. You know what kind of book you're getting into when A is for Angela Davis.
Yeah, that's kind of like throwing down the gauntlet right there.
it really does. We're not trying to trick you. You're not going to get the cue and find like the revolutionary. We started out right away.
And then that it's, that it was published by City Lights Books, which has a great reputation in those kinds of books, I mean, they published like Howl by Allen Ginsberg, and they published Noam Chomsky's work. And, you know, obviously just a lot of wonderful writers and artists and thinkers and all that in the world. So, yeah, and then so it would be totally appropriate to put Angela Davis first in the book.
Yeah. And this is their first children's book. This is their 60th anniversary this year, and it's the first children's book.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great. I don't know. I guess I would have assumed that they had children's books before this, but that's great that they that they went this route. And this seems totally like a natural kind of progression for them. So, and how was it acquiring a publisher? Did you just go straight to City Lights, or was there like a process of sending the manuscript out or shopping the idea around? Or,
you know, we went through. There's a wonderful writer named Michelle T, who is another Bay Area icon. Although she just moved to LA, but Michelle has been working with City Lights doing an imprint called Sister Spit, and it was kind of a collaboration between she and City Lights, where she was bringing in some kind of younger local writers that she was excited about and bringing their manuscripts to City Lights, and they were publishing them together. Most of what she'd brought to them was poetry, fiction, and creative memoir. But we know Michelle, and she was pregnant at the time, and we thought, hey, maybe she'll be in children's books now. So we approached Michelle.
Yeah. Right.
We approached Michelle with the idea, and she got really excited, and so she took it to City Lights, and they said yes.
That hardly happens that way. So that's nice that it happened. It sort of lined up for you that way.
it was very, very lucky. Yeah, we feel so grateful for that. I mean, as writers, we know what it's like to get rejected over and over and over.
Totally.
And so this was kind of the right place at the right time. And I think that we kind of recognized that City Lights would be such a good fit for this project. And luckily we were correct.
Yeah, they have the right sort of target audience for that. But also, like, have you heard of any like types of programming that's happened maybe around the book, you know, just across the country or anywhere the book has been? Like, tell us about that.
So much.
Because, I mean, the reason why I ask you is because some of our listeners obviously are teachers, and it'd be great for them to know about it and the possibilities for a book like this.
Yeah. You know, there's teachers doing really great lesson plans. I mean, I know teachers that have done entire 1 or 2 month units on the book, reading a different woman every day, having students doing, reports and presentations or doing art projects based on the book. You know, it's very, I have to speak the teacher language for a second. It's very Common Core aligned.
It
really works with Common Core. And we actually have a Common Core lesson plan up on our website, which is Rad American Women A to Z, or radamericanwomen.com, rather.
Right.
And so folks can find that there. And we had an education consultant do that. But beyond the classroom, one of our favorite things that we've seen is we went down to Fresno State University down in Fresno, California.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That's my hometown.
Oh my God. So we had the best time in Fresno, and they did this amazing program where they got the Women's Studies Department, the Art Department, all these different programs in this interdisciplinary project where they did a Rad Women of Fresno project. Mm. And they picked all of these iconic women from Fresno State, these labor leaders, these activists, these really incredible women. And then they did these full-size illustrations that they then wheat-pasted all over the campus.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And each one had a QR code that you could scan, and they made a website where you could go learn about this. So they, I mean, they went all out. They brought us down
there.
And we went down and did a talk, and we were just blown away by how much they'd embraced it. And what we loved is that, you know, it took it beyond the 26 women in the book. And I always say that this book is just a conversation starter. You know, this is to get you thinking about more people. So that they took it to a local level and recognized the women in their community who've been rad and influential was such a great thing to see. So I've seen that starting to happen.
It's great.
There's another, you know, there's more groups that I'm in communication with who are wanting to do similar projects that recognize people in their community.
That's, I think that would be the kind of ideal situation, right, for a book like this, is that it inspires, it inspires teachers and community members and activists to start to look at their own community and the people that are around them immediately and you know, who've changed the face or the game in their local immediate, you know, surroundings. And so, and then to honor that, you know, and so that's fantastic.
Yep.
I love hearing that. So then, Fresno was, they were looking at like just local leaders that have sort of changed. Is that what they were doing, right?
Yeah,
it was
specifically, and it was specifically women that had gone to Fresno State.
Oh, I see. Oh,
and then who had made like a huge impact. So there were athletes. It was very cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
We were so excited about that.
We actually, let me say for our listeners, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with author and editor Kate Schatz, who is, her new book is called Rad American Women A to Z, and it's been recently released with City Lights Books. One of the women in the book I was really happy to see actually was Rachel Carson, who was one of, and also of course one of my personal favorites though was Odetta. I loved that the fact that you included Odetta in the book. I was like, I don't know if I would ever get to see a sort of children's, you know, rendition or book of Odetta, you know, which was, as a fan of her music, you know, I would imagine too. And then there were others actually that that I never heard of, like Maya Lin. Who's an artist and whose contribution everybody pretty much knows if you were at least born and raised in America, maybe, you know, but she's the one who did the veterans, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I would imagine that there were other rad American women that you just had to exclude for whatever, obviously through your process. Were there some that you just really thought, gosh, you know, maybe there's a second edition coming out or something?
Yes. Well, we would love to do another Rad American Women book. We do have we have another book coming out in September that's Rad Women Worldwide.
Oh,
which
nice.
I can talk about that. But
nice.
But in terms of this one, yes, there were so many women that we wanted. You know, I would have loved to have Jane Addams, the wonderful social worker and founder of Whole House and activist. You know, then I learned about Jovita Idar, who you mentioned earlier, who is a very obscure figure, you know, not well-known outside of Texas, really. But her contribution to education, to journalism, and her work as a Mexican-American woman, you know, in the very early 20th century, I thought was so phenomenal that I wanted to include her instead of Jane Addams. I would have loved to include Fannie Lou Hamer. But we decided to go with Ella Baker, and because we were really trying to show a range, not that they're the same person by any means, but they were working in a similar field at a similar time. And for S, S in the book is Sonia Sotomayor, and Miriam, the illustrator, really wanted it to be Sister Carita Kent, who was the radical nun who was an artist and an anti-Vietnam War activist.
So
we had a number that we couldn't quite fit in. But,
sure. There are only so many letters in the alphabet, right?
It's true.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about the artist Miriam Klein-Stahl, who her work is, you know, in each of these pages here that you collaborated with.
Yeah.
How did that work?
Oh, so the illustrations that Miriam created, they're all paper cuts. And she does them all just with a black piece of construction paper and an X-Acto knife.
Wow.
And she cuts them out, and they're beautiful. They're these incredible, almost like lace, how they hang together. And she's an artist. She's quite well known in the Bay Area. She's done a lot of activist work. She does a lot of portraits of social justice heroes and kind of punks and cool people. And she was an acquaintance of mine. We have a lot of mutual friends, and I really admired her work. And so when I had the idea for the book, you know, and I was thinking, what kind of illustrations would I want to have? I immediately thought of her work because it's so bold and strong and really unique. It was important to have illustrations that felt as strong and bold as the women, you know, and we also wanted them to be pleasing both to young people and to adults. We didn't want it to read too cutesy and kid-like, you know.
Right.
And so that's why we wanted to go with these kind of modern, clean, kind of minimalist images.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's a wonderful collaborator.
Yeah, no, and I get that. I mean, the illustrations, I think, fit the tone of all these sort of mini narratives of these profiles of women, you know. So it was just a great, I think, an excellent collaboration. In fact, what I'm going to ask you to do for us is that these, you know, these profiles, for the listener out there, these profiles are actually fairly short. So if you wouldn't mind, would you mind reading one of these for us?
I'd be happy to. I have a book right here.
Great. Please do.
What do you have any requests?
Yeah, you know what? I think since we're based out of El Paso, Texas, I think that Jovita Hidalgo would be fantastic for listeners.
Awesome. All right. And so a lot of people ask me, they say, you know, how did you know? Did you know about all these people? And so I Jovita is someone who I'd never heard of before I started the research for this book. And again, when I read about her, as I was just kind of going through the internet and reading women's history books, I came across her name and I looked her up and I thought, you know, oh, this woman's amazing. So, and I have to say, because each of these biographies is quite short, they're about 300 words. There are so many things she did that I could not fit on this page, but
I would imagine. Yeah.
J is for Jovita, who believed in free and equal education for all children. Jovita Hidalgo was many things during her lifetime, including a nurse, a journalist, an editor, and a political activist. She was also a teacher who believed that all children had the right to a good education, no matter how much money their parents had or what language they spoke. Jovita, the oldest of eight children, was born in 1885 in Laredo, Texas, a town on the Texas-Mexico border. Her father ran a newspaper called La Crónica that published articles in Spanish, many of which spoke out against the prejudice experienced by the Hidalgos and many other families who were Mexican and Tejano, which is Texans of Spanish or Mexican heritage. Jovita wrote for the paper, but she also wanted to be a teacher. At 17, she got her teaching credential and began to teach in Los Ojuelos, a tiny town on the border not far from Laredo. Her students were poor and the school was in terrible shape. It had no heat, no textbooks, and not enough desks and chairs. Jovita asked for more funding for her school, but the education leaders in Texas refused to listen to her. Poor Mexican-American students were not a priority for them. This made Jovita furious, but it also inspired her to take action. Mexican children in Texas need an education, she said. There is no other means to do it but ourselves. She organized a group of women called La Liga Femenil Mexicanista, the Mexican Feminist League. They taught poor children and adults how to read and write and created bilingual lessons to be used in schools. They also opened new schools, including one in Los Ojuelos that had heat and textbooks. These schools were free and open to all children. And that wasn't all that Jovita did. After she published an article that criticized President Woodrow Wilson for sending soldiers to the U.S.-Mexico border, the Texas Rangers showed up at the newspaper office to try to shut it down. Jovita stood in the doorway to block them from entering and to defend her freedom of speech. Soon after that, her father passed away, and Jovita took over La Crónica. She became the editor-in-chief and spent many more years as a courageous and influential journalist. That is the story of Jovita.
Wonderful. Thank you. And you've been listening to author Kate Schatz about her wonderful new children's book, Rad American Women A to Z, out with City Lights Books. If you're a parent, teacher, or just looking for a great book, you want to be sure to pick that one up. Thank you so much, Kate, for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.